Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in and watching, listening, whatever you're doing to see the show. You can podcast the show. We're on a bunch of different podcasts, radio stations in five different radio stations, three different states. And we are also, let's see, what else are we? YouTube, absolutely. Podclips.io. What are some of the other podcasts we're on?
Well, Apple Podcasts, Google. Perfect. Google and Apple, those are the biggies.
Yep.
Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia. Radio.com, and you mentioned YouTube and Podclips.
Absolutely, and if you go and you want to see us, YouTube is a place to go. Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, that's where we are. You can see our website, themortgagevoice.com. You can go there and see a bunch of different clips from shows past and present shows. How is that looking, Daryl?
It looks pretty clean. I'm up to date and happening, yeah.
Excellent. Okay, so we've got a number of different places. Now, Malibu Funding was the company that sponsors the show, NMLS number 79620. They've been very generous over the years at supplying us with our ability to get on air and really talk to you about mortgages, mortgage rates. It is not the most entertaining subject, but if you need one, where do you go for the information? And that's the point of what the show has been about. And as we continue to grow the show and grow the footprint of the show in the different medias around radio, I guess, is the central point of it, it's been gratifying to bring information to you. I do get comments from a lot of different areas. Certainly the email. My Twitter handle is at Jeff6493 if you want to tweet me. Instagram, all kinds of Facebook, LinkedIn. We do a minute show there almost three, four times a week that we bring updates to the people who are on those social media feeds. And as a result, we get, as I said, terrific feedback from you, the consumer, about what you want to hear, what you want to do. Occasionally, we'll get somebody that says, hey, who was that person on your show last week, blah, 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 and we hand out that information. And again, if you go to YouTube, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, you will see and hear not only the people who are on the show, but you'll hear me. You can be able to get the contact information that you're looking for if you don't want to call me directly. There are several things I wanted to get to in today's show. We have a pretty good lineup today from Orion Lending and also some more about solar. I'm a big believer in solar, but not a big believer in the bureaucracy. It's kind of like democracy itself. I won't get political on that, but in terms of trying to get something done, it is extremely difficult, especially when you have the will and the money and the stamina. Sometimes it just baffles the mind, the difficulties that you encounter along the way with other people who have their own particular thing that they have to do before you can get what you want. And that is true with solar. We're going to ask Clinton a little bit about that and some more about what goes on in the solar world so that we have a better idea of how we might be able to wend ourselves off carbon fuel, which is the wave of the future, whether we want it or not, whether we want to, you know, argue the point politically or not. It's happening. I mean, all the big major car companies around the world are doing it. And as soon as that happens, you're going to cut the emissions by a third to 40-50% anyway. And then the drive towards electric production other than carbon fuel, that'll be it. Although we will never really truly get rid of it because everything runs on the lubrication of that particular substance. Okay, let's get right to it. In the news you can use section of the show, we'll get right to the rates. The 30-year fixed rate, these are averages across the country that we put together. If you want to see what I see in many of the places, Housing Wire is one place. Certainly if you go to, what is it, Mortgage News Daily, that's another place to go to, and all the financial sites that you want to, whether it's CNBC, whether it's Wall Street, WSJ, or you know, wherever you want to go, you can get this information, but we're going to put it together for you here. The 30-year fixed rate at 3.19, the 15-year is at 2.57, the FHA is at 2.83, and the jumbo is at 3.12, and the 5/1 ARM is at 2.87. Now, all of these rates have really come down a little bit, but since last week, they've actually gone up a bit, and that's because we have a changing world economy and the viewpoint. Now, one thing about central bankers around the world, these people don't really rush to do anything, but we've seen pressure from a number of different central banks around the world to begin raising rates. And in our own country, the Fed, head by Jerome Powell, and he's up for renomination, and the sentiment is that he's not going to be able to, or not going to be able to, but not going to get renominated. I don't know whether that's true or not. I happen to like the fact that the Fed chair stays on for a couple of presidential terms. It's just the way I think the Fed should be run, as opposed to a political appointment. You should be able to get through each and every term. I know a number of people who do not like Jerome Powell. There are certainly other Fed members who have retired recently because of the problems that they're having, either saying we should raise rates immediately or that we should continue the accommodative posture. That's a fancy word for saying print more money. And we have been printing a ton of it. And that money is being used to buy treasuries at $80 billion a month and mortgage-backed securities at $40 billion a month. That also will begin to, I guess what they call is the taper. We don't want to send it into the taper tantrum, which is what we had the last time we did this, which was back in 2013, I think it was. But around the world, we are hearing the rumblings and the beginnings of raising rates. Now, what does that mean? That means the central bank overnight rate, which banks lend money to each other and from the Treasury and the Fed, will be raising. And that particular instrument is used by and large to cover what the banks, the major banks, Wells and Citi and Chase and a number of other, Bank of America, they have to carry a certain liquidity each and every day. It's just part of, you know, what they have to do in order to stay in business. As a result of having not enough, they need to borrow from the discount window. That's what they call it when you go to the federal government and ask for money. Many times, they have a surplus of that money, and they then lend that money or give it to the Fed to lend out to other banks. That particular rate by which the federal government will be charging for their end of it is what we call raising the rates. The mortgage interest rates are, of course, run by other things, and those other things are the 10-year bond, for instance. And certainly the 10-year bond, as we've seen recently, has once again gone up this week. It's at 1.633. 3 weeks ago, it was at 1.3. 3 months ago, it was at just below 1. So we've seen a real movement in the 10-year bond, and that is the yield on the 10-year bond moving upwards. As the yield moves upward, i.e., you have to pay people to buy your bonds, obviously, that means that the mortgage rates, in order to pay for that, have to rise too. So all of that means for the consumer, you're going to see your rates rise, and you're going to see them raise sooner than later. Now, the Fed, the banking that they lend out, interbank, that's going to raise too, which also puts pressure on the mortgage rates. So there are a two-front war going on here. That's what I'm trying to say, that puts these two pillars of what happens to the mortgage rates pushing rates higher. And that's why I say it's going to happen. Now, there are a number of other influences in the marketplace. One is what's going on in the world. Are we in a war? Is there a glut of oil? Is there not enough oil? Do we have economies, or what we call now the supply chain issue, pushing prices higher, which is what we call inflation? Are all of these pressures continuing to build to show that, hey, we also have to do something about it? And what we're going to have to do about it is to raise rates. Usually when there is a scary time, marketplace, a worldwide events, whatever it is, the markets tend to get jittery and nervous. So either they raise rates to slow down borrowing, or they tighten the restrictions on lending money. And that, too, covers their risk. So all of these things are happening. I want to get to some of the things going on in China, which I think is a way bigger deal than most people are really giving it credence for, and then go through some of the prices that we've been talking about. We have certainly energy issues, which we're going to deal with Clinton Brown when he comes on. I think energy in and of itself at $80 a barrel Obviously, when we were dealing at $40 a barrel and $3.50 gas here in California, now in California it's almost $5 a gallon of gas, and this is felt across the country. Whatever you were paying, obviously you're paying a lot more now. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, for listening each and every week. I am real happy always to bring great guests to the show. And if you want to hear these great guests after the interview, or you missed something, or contact information, you can go to YouTube, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice. It's there. Hundreds of shows from 8 years of doing this. And certainly today's guests are no exception. Michelle Wild is the Vice President of Sales over at Orion Lending. I asked her to come on and talk a little bit about market first off. Michelle, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you very much. I'm a little tired, actually. It's been a very long run of extremely busy time. How about yourself?
Absolutely. It's a rat race, but we're very excited. It's very exciting times. You know, we've been very, very busy doing a lot of transactions, a ton of purchase business. And it is an incredible time in the mortgage industry, and we're excited to hopefully keep this up for quite a while longer.
I agree with you. Now, I just spent two sections of the show talking about how interest rates probably are going to raise, but not crazy, maybe by 4% at the end of next year. What are you all looking at, and how are you seeing what your business is doing?
I would agree with you with that. I think that rates are definitely going to start rising. It is the nature of the cycle of rates and what the bond market is doing and what right. the rest of the market is doing. I would anticipate you're probably really right on the money by the end of next year. So, you know, people who are on the fence as far as refinancing, they should get off the fence because you're going to see a rising rate environment very soon.
Yeah, I agree with you. Tell me something about the products that you're offering there in order to really facilitate some of these borrowers.
Well, you know, there's so many different options right now, and we have options for people who are investors. Right now, we offer some products for people who are investors and up to 20 finance properties.
Wow.
In addition to that, you know, we do lots of jumbo products and lots of the, you know, traditional agency products as well.
Okay, so you talked a little about purchase. And I know that we've been in a refi market, and anybody in our industry knows that as soon as the rates go up, the refinances dry up. And so there's going
Correct.
To be a competition for, obviously, the purchase business. Do you see that thinning out the margins within our industry? And as a result, are you going to see more mergers and perhaps some people going out of business?
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. There's far too many people who have banked on kind of a refi frenzy in the last year or two. And you're going to see, to be honest with you, before that frenzy happened, we were expecting several of those companies to consolidate or go out of business. And so as the business models, and there's several business models right now that are actually functioning at a loss.
Right.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense.
No. Nope.
And as some of those same companies are on the verge of filing some bankruptcies. And, you know, when the bankruptcy courts look at their financials, they have to show that they're, you know, working towards actually making money. So we'll see some of those people go out of the business. I think the key for people as far as what's going to be available is there's a lot of people, including Orion Lending, that are very focused on purchase money business.
Right.
And we're focused on all different options to help borrowers get into homes. We have 10 different down payment assistance programs
Right.
for people not only in the lower buckets, but we have one of our down payment assistance options that has an unlimited income requirement. So, you know, those down payment assistance programs are going to help people get into homes. And, you know, then we have, you know, some of our other stuff that's very aggressive in the jumbo world for people that are looking at that.
I like the down
end of the spectrum.
Yeah, there's a couple of companies that have been traditionally in the down payment assistance world. I like the down payment assistance. I know that the there's a couple of bills in Congress. They're looking at a 20-year with Fed help in terms of paying the mortgage on a monthly, trying to get new borrowers, obviously borrowers that are low income and maybe even low credit score, into the market, and that's all purchase. I mean, they're looking at first-time homebuyer help. What describe some of the down payment assistance programs that you have in across? Are they national programs that you're talking about, or are these more local?
Yeah, we have all national programs. Mm-hmm. Everything that we offer at Orion is national programs.
Okay.
And the there's 10 different options, but we have an option for people who are under 115% of the median income. It covers the loan originator. It covers the down payment, and on that one, if they're under 115% of the median income, there's no payment on the second, as long as they make on-time payments on the first for a period of time, then the second actually disappears unless they sell it or refinance in that period of time. But it really does help those borrowers get in. Now, we have different options because we have so many different down payment assistance programs.
Sure.
We have something for somebody that goes up to 135% of the median income, up to 165% of the median income, and also for people who have unlimited income. Now, you're seeing a lot of trends of people geographically moving, and
yep.
You're finding people that a lot of people are having to move in order to afford to buy a home.
That's right.
With a lot of more people, employers allowing people to work remotely, you're seeing people able to go into more affordable markets and actually be able to. There's a lot of people historically in California, for instance, that just have never been able to buy a house because
right. It's
so expensive to live there.
It's unbelievable. And when you talked about the population moving, I was thinking about California itself, which lost about, the last 10 years, lost over a million people to states like Arizona or Nevada or Utah, and pushing those real estate markets and their particular pricing really much higher. Do you see, now from your standpoint as a lender, the appraisal process getting bottlenecked or having some issues coming to terms with the new prices on real estate, especially the way equity has risen over the last 3 years?
Yeah, it's we got several factors involved in that. One, you have a shortage of appraisers, and two, there's some parts of the country that have appreciated so quickly,
right?
And depending on the trends and if they continue, because you have the people, especially specifically, let's talk about Arizona.
Right.
In Arizona, the market has expanded so drastically. So, I mean, it's just incredible how much the values have gone up there. There's a lot of people in the, lower income brackets that no longer can even find a house to buy.
Right.
Even if they go far out of town. So you're going to find, you're going to find the loan limits are increasing. We're
right.
definitely excited about that. We're, Orion is personally increasing the loan limits starting Monday, based on the 2022 loan limits.
Okay.
And so that will help a little bit for people to be able to get a traditional loan, a conforming loan, instead of having to look at a jumbo loan, which just becomes more expensive and requires a lot more money down.
Now, traditionally, we look at population growth as a way by which we decide whether we're going to build houses, either here regionally or certainly throughout the country. Where do you see... I've looked at some projections, and also not only here but around the world, about how the population is really going to be shrinking after a certain period of time, maybe when the boomers get gone, which will be in the next, 15 to 20 years. Do you see that as a problem immediately, or do you see something that we won't be addressing until it happens?
I think you're going to see, you could start to see that geographically in certain areas, especially when you're talking about some of the more rural communities.
Right.
You can definitely start to see that. I definitely think that we will have that to agree. I have to tell you, I'm shocked at the younger 20-something generation, the people I know personally that are having more kids. It used to be you'd see one kid per
right.
family, and I'm seeing a lot of younger 20-some couples who are having 3 and 4 kids again.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if it's going to start to switch the other way or not, and it's going to be an interesting thing. But I will tell you, areas like Idaho, around Boise, areas like around the Phoenix area in the Maricopa and Pinal counties, those are growing like crazy.
Yep.
Southern Florida is just, there's only so many people that can fit down there. And we're seeing areas like Fort Myers and Naples that the values have just skyrocketed, and the population is becoming so dense there that you're going to see it spreading and spreading. And I think there's a lot of states that are very business friendly.
Yes.
That the population will continue to grow, as I think there's states that are not so business friendly, where you'll see both the population change because of the boomers going away to heaven, and then you're going to also see population shifts where businesses are going to be moving their employees into business-friendly states. So it's going to be interesting to see, because there's a whole lot of stuff like maybe in New England and California, Oregon and Washington, a lot of businesses there that are pulling out and going to other states.
Right, I agree with that completely. Listen, we're up against it. Michelle, thank you very much for coming on the show once again. I always love talking to you. I wish we had more time.
Awesome. Well, have a great day, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. This is Michelle Wild, the VP of Sales, Regional Sales at Orion Lending. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry, and we bring to you each and every week some guests, some people who come on the show and talk to you about all kinds of different things. They're experts. They're better than I am at what they do, and we really appreciate that. You can hear the show. We're on 5 radio stations in 3 different states, from Albuquerque, New Mexico, all the way up to Central California, in Lake Tahoe area as well, Southern California, and in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're on 10 different podcasts. Daryl, you got a list of those for me?
I sure do, Jeff. It's Apple Podcasts, Google Music Play, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, Radio.com, YouTube, and Podclips.io.
Podclips.io is a great place to go to get your latest and greatest podcasters. And if you want to see me, go to YouTube, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice. Okay, let's bring on Clinton right now. Clinton Brown is a guy that has been on the show before. He is in, as everyone knows, I love solar, love talking about it. He works for Atlas, Inc. And as I said, he's been on the show before. And let's welcome him. Clinton, how are you? Thanks for coming on.
Hey, doing well. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Okay, so in energy brokering, in large-scale solar development, describe to us a little bit about what that industry is and how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. So my company, CEO of Atlas Inc., we develop autonomous solar fields. And so what that means is that these solar utility solar scale farms are autonomous. So they work with drones, AI technology, machine learning, and they collaborate with one another across various sites that we have for best practices. And it's a really neat industry, the where it's, where it's going, with a lot of government involvement to get these solar fields on and operating to reduce our carbon emissions.
You know, the biggest farm I know of is the one that you drive out from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, Nevada. It's a huge farm. I don't know if you've seen it. But it's anybody who's driven the 15 and gone out that way will know exactly what I'm talking about. Is this the type of project that you're involved with, this kind of stuff?
Well, our particular technology that we use for a large-scale project like that actually takes up less land space.
I see.
So if we're talking about a 65-megawatt farm, and that would only cover around 90 acres, which is a lot less than in some of these other farms that have been online in the past. And also, for environmental purposes, you don't use concrete or really anything but hand tools to install them. So they're really easy to install and also not troublesome to the environment. And also, because the technology's evolved, that they actually produce more power. So from my understanding, that one is more of a concentrating one that concentrates the sun power. But the ones that we use are they absorb just like a normal solar panel and transfer that to the grid.
Now, a lot of interesting points. The technology of the panels themselves. Now, I was a believer and have been for a long time solar, and we have batteries and blah, 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 backup systems and all that. Why is there such a long contract between end user and producer and the power companies? And is there a demand for large-scale production of something like this in smaller communities, especially rural communities?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that is hopefully going to be addressed by Congress. The utility companies, unfortunately, are still operating on a 19th century, 20th century, I think, mentality. For example, we have several projects that are ready to be put in the ground and have a government approval, but we are in, you know, talks with the utility companies to get that interconnection and the PPA. Now, what I have started to think about, and, you know, any feedback would be helpful, is, you know, we would like to just put some of these farms up and charge the batteries and be able to sort of like a generator and be able to give those to, you know, large buildings that they would be able to connect to, that they would kind of be on their own microgrid.
Right.
And especially for rural communities, because, you know, to convert some of these buildings, which, you know, they actually are a really big driver of carbon emissions. You need like electricity, you need like all like three or four different, you know, types of handy people that are registered, and we just don't have enough folks for that. So if, you know, the utilities aren't going to play the ball, you know, we're ready to bypass them.
Yeah, I think there's a stall, and when I installed my own particular system, which wasn't all that long ago, what I found was there was such a need to control the process but obfuscate exactly what the heck the process was. There were several different elements to it. I don't know if you watch Bill Maher on television. I was watching him the other night on some rerun. He was talking about the difficulties he has. Now, he's a rich guy. Putting solar on his house, he had like all these different people from not only the city but the utilities, and it just seems like it can't be that complex if someone wants to create their own power and to be able to feed it back into the grid. But there seems to be a lack of, I guess, desire of people invested in carbon oil-based electricity production from helping out in that arena.
Yeah, and so I think that one of the things that, unfortunately, you know, Congress, hopefully they'll be able to pass it, is, you know, is to reward these utility companies that are pushing for the transition and then punish those that aren't.
Right.
We really need a program where that the – so, for example, in Australia, which I feel is pretty – we have a project actually in Australia too. So
I see.
One of the cool things about, you know, this kind of industry is it's global. And what they use is they actually get paid. They have a different system that they use. So they actually just feed whatever they produce into the grid, and then whatever they take out, if it's a plus or minus, so meaning if they produce more than they
use,
they just automatically get the money. So the incentive for them is actually to produce more, and they are, you know, so it's a different feedback loop than what we use here. And so I think that could be something that could be helpful.
I agree.
But, yeah.
I agree. Incentivizing people, even, let's say I get no money, but in fact the bill gets lowered to a point whereby it's at least a break even, because I would have put 5 or 6 more panels on my house if that was the case. But it wasn't the case. I was limited to the amount of solar panels to put, and I assume anybody who buys this is limited to their usage. So you have to play this game of, wait a second, I want to produce as much as I can produce, but contractually you can't do that. It's a very frustrating industry that way.
Absolutely. In Australia, you know, I think it's a good example of that, you know, they get paid.
Right.
You know, they produce more. And so they're, you know, I mean, it seems like that would help the utility companies, you know, reach the, you know, federal government goals and such, and also help homeowners, individuals, you know, make a little extra money, and also help the environment.
Right.
So I totally agree with that. I think there's, you know, different programs that we need to look at, but I do appreciate the question about the utility companies, because that is hands down the biggest obstacle that we face as an industry, and also to move towards a carbon-free, system.
That's the goal. Obviously, there's money to be made, and everyone should make money. Absolutely. But I would imagine that companies that are invested in oil technologies would be best served to make the transition to producing solar-based, wind-based, other non-harmful. That'd be the way of the future, because it's coming. I mean, whether you want it or not, it's coming.
Yeah, I think it presents a really great opportunity for, small businesses and to grow into larger businesses. I mean,
right.
The last time we had this energy transition was, the Industrial Revolution, which
right.
ironically is what's causing this new transition.
Yes, right.
So, I think it's important to really, they say public utilities, and then we got the private utilities. But really, this is, to me, I look at it as the kind of our nation's infrastructure, like highway,
right.
Internet. I mean, people need to be able to access it and be able to, the safety on this, it's not like they're going to tear the grid up,
Right.
It's very automated. The grid can, as it's being upgraded, can handle that type of, if it's producing more here or less here, and you got the batteries. So I think we have the technology. We just have to have the will. And
I agree.
And I do agree with you.
Hey, listen, could you let people know how to get in touch with you, especially if they're looking at, some kind of solar project for their town or their city?
Yeah, absolutely. Our website is Atlas Inc. So Atlas, A-T-L-A-S-I-N-C, .solar.
Excellent. Thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That's CEO from Atlas Inc., Clinton Brown. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks for listening to the show today. I really had some interesting things that I wanted to get to. But first off, you can hear this show in a lot of different ways, right? You can hear it broadcast. We are in 5 different stations, from Albuquerque up to Las Vegas, Southern California, and certainly in Lake Tahoe. So you can do it that way. You can do it with our podcasts. Daryl, you got a list of those for us?
I sure do. The greatest podcasters in the world. Apple
yes.
Podcasts, Google Music Play, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, Radio.com, which is CBS, YouTube, and podclips.io.
Podclips.io, that's one of the new ones out there. If you go there, there's a whole bunch of new podcasts that you've probably never heard of. It's exciting when you get to a place where you go, oh, I can get anything I want here. I get health and sports and business and finance and, wow, this is great. So podclips.io. If you want to see the show, we've been showing this show on YouTube for years. We have hundreds of shows there. We also do a weekly, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, that's the address. We have a weekly that we do on LinkedIn and Facebook. We do Instagram called The Mortgage Minute, and also my Twitter handle, @Jeff6493. All of these places are great places to get information about what's happening in the mortgage industry. What drives the mortgage industry is obviously the rates. They're up. The rates are up. Refis are down. Purchases are going to be king in the near future, foreseeable future. We've had maybe 4 or 5 years of rates which have been below 5%, probably below 4%. In the last 18 months, they've been below 3%. So if you're out there and you are smart, you will maintain that mortgage until you pay the mortgage off, because it's never going to get lower, and you are going to have, really low payments. You probably got into a house a bit more out of your price range than you wanted, but because of the low rates, you can pay it off, be comfortable with the mortgage, the monthly mortgage payment, and that's a good thing. There are reasons that you need to take money out. I understand it, and there's a couple of ways you can do that. You can do a home equity line of credit. That's basically you're putting your house on a credit card, and you're basically taking money out when you need it. When you take money out of the house, once they give you a line, that's when the interest rate kicks in, and those interest rates can be anywhere from 5 and 6% up, just depending on whether you use it or whether you don't. The other one is cash out refi. Now, cash out refi is going to recast your loan, but you will get a lump sum out immediately. Now, cash out refi, let's say you have a rate at 3%, and you've had 20% increase in the last 2 years on your home, but you need to take some money out because you have an emergency. There's all kinds of reasons you need the money. You can want to invest it. You have a medical emergency. You want to have a rainy day fund. You have children going to school. You have all kinds of things. You want to invest in a business now because it's a great time to invest in a business as we come out of COVID. That blended rate, I'm not blended rate, but that rate that you're going to get now based on what the rates are today is still pretty good. So if you wanted to do a cash out refi, take some money out of your property, the rates today are probably, as I, what did I quote earlier, 3.19% for a 30-year fixed. No, it's not 2.75%, which it was, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, but 2 years ago it was probably pretty close to what it is today. But the cash out refi is the reason you're doing, and that's the benefit of the real estate market and the increase in the value of your home in this particular market, which is a good thing if you own property. Owning property is the quickest way, even though 30 years is not quick, but think about it for a second. You buy a home, in 30 years it's paid off, and now you have the accrued increase in what the house has been rising in, even if we go through downturns. Look, if you owned a home in 2004, you bought it at the height of the market, 2004 to 2006, the market crashed, you were upside down, meaning you owed more than what the house was worth. Even then, which some areas in Malibu Funding, the company that sponsors the show and I work for, they're in 13 states. In most of those states, you saw a drop anywhere from 25 to 65% in the value of the home. And all of those homes underwater are now sitting on huge equity gains. That was, well, you think it, 2006, 2021, what is that, 15 years. So if you had a 30-year mortgage that you got into at that time, you got 15 years left, and you now have super equity in your home. You probably have already refied into a much lower rate, but now, even in a market like that, getting wealthy works if you own your home. If you own two homes, rent one out, works like that too. These are times by which you need to look at what the investment opportunities are. If you took money out of your house, invested in something else, and waited another 30 years, that too would become part of your long-term strategy to either retire or pass wealth on to your children or your grandchildren or however you want to do it. This has been the way it's been done. 90% of millionaires in the U.S. have done it exactly like this. Now, in this particular market, it's not great for, obviously, first-time homebuyers. People who are millennials who have been waiting on the sidelines for years, finally have a good job, paid off that college loan, and now wants to get into, you know, they want to have a family, they want to start to build the equity in their life so that they too can one day retire. It has been tough, but because interest rates have been so extremely low, it's been affordable. How much can the equity in your home, if you're at the top of the real estate market, which we may be close, although from what I see, based on several different sources that I'm looking at, real estate is supposed to, again next year, go up another 16% on average across the country. Some of the gains that we've seen, Austin, Texas last year, 45% real estate increased in value. 45%. I love Austin, but I don't love me some Austin that much that I want to pay a 45% increase in what the houses there are going to cost. Although, you know, I live in Southern California. Now, a lot of people in my listening audience do not. So the average value of real estate here is so outrageously high that if I took and sold, like a lot of Californians have done, sold my property here and moved to, you know, one of these neighboring states, I could buy all cash, still stick a bunch of money in the bank and be happy, which drives the locals nuts because it drives their real estate prices up. I understand all that. But buying low is not an option right now. Borrowing low is an option right now. Getting into real estate, if you're in that mindset, people who are getting into it, biggest home buying population ever are the millennials. and they're all heavily invested in buying homes. They want to buy a home. These people have been waiting. Now's the time. Okay, so because of this, and because of what's happening in the marketplace, my suggestion is to find something now. Find something now till the end of the year and buy it, because we're going to see the interest rates rise, because the nature of what's going on, both internationally, as we've talked about earlier in the show, and may talk about next week and the week after in the show, whether it be China or Europe or a number of other places, dictate that real estate in the U.S., fed by, you know, buyers from around the world as well as the local demand, yeah, you're going to see some pressure on the rates to rise even more than the Fed says they're going to raise or the 10-year bond is going to raise. Selling U.S. debt is not as popular as it was during the COVID crisis the last 18 months. We've seen actually a return to right about where it was before COVID, the 10-year selling at 1.61% or 1.66, what is it, 1.63. That's what it was on average this week. Yes, lots of things going on. Take that suggestion to heart. Find a piece of real estate somewhere, whether it's here, whether it's local, whether it's in many of the states, whether it's Florida or Washington State, whether it's down in Texas or in Illinois, Colorado, a new state that's come online, or Idaho, or down in Georgia, or certainly in Virginia. All these places that we do business, Malibu Funding, the company that sponsors the show and who pays me, yes, there are places that you can afford. Find something and, you know, get into real estate now. It's the best way by which you can secure your long-term needs as you pay off the mortgage. Thanks for listening. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, for listening each and every week. We bring to you information and people who have great answers, answers to problems that are out there. Most of them have to do with the immediacy of what your deal is. Now, if you're listening to the show and you have been, we deal on a macro level when I talk. But when we talk to the guest on the show, we deal with the minutia of that particular loan, that particular product, this particular business, what's happening in this particular city. And I think the blend of those two gives you a perspective that you just don't get other places. So let's get into some of the different aspects that I think affect the mortgage market. All of these things worldwide are part and parcel to the economy of the world. But in China, for instance, now I've been talking about China for the last 2 or 3 weeks. I think what's going on over there with their real estate situation, what's gone on there for the past 10 to 15 years in their building boom and the population and a lot of other things that has affected. And let's be honest, since the advent of cheap stuff in the U.S., now we're talking Walmart, right? When you could go to Walmart and buy something that you could get at your local hardware store or your local toy store, and you could buy that product at Walmart for 15, 20% less, this is what killed Main Street in most cities. The advent of the big box, right? Today, the big box is Amazon. Same concept, buy a lot of stuff at a lot less money. Nobody thought it through at the time. There were some people who said, hey, this probably isn't good for Main Street America. But Main Street America moved on. They got to businesses that could be more productive. And the business model for somebody who's got 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 or 15, 20 different people working for them, if they close down, open a different business, yes, all those people will recycle through the economy. But what happened was we got hooked on cheap stuff. And hooking yourself on anything is not a good idea. Being an ex-addict myself, I'll tell you, all you want is to keep getting cheaper and cheaper stuff. So as a result of that, China and their economy and how they were producing products for the U.S. market obviously grew, exploded. Last 30 years, we've seen China grow from a backwater kind of economy to now really rivaling the U.S. in terms of consumer spending. what we've seen recently, last week, week before, we've seen the Chinese leadership do a U-turn, move away from capitalism, more about bringing, you know, equality across their economies, so that you wouldn't have the Ma guy, who was really the big multi-billionaire, Alibaba, if you all know what the company is. It's kind of like our Google. But they put him in jail. I don't know. Nobody's seen that guy for a long time. So they've been cutting the legs out from under a lot of venture capitalist-type companies. And so we went from the U.S., supporting this huge growth, Europe too, and a lot of the world, but mostly the U.S., because we buy everything and we buy a lot of it. And so that growth period of 30 years to bring Chinese economy was a plan. What was the plan? The plan was to try to bring domestic consumption in China to that rivaled the U.S., so that they would no longer need to make cheap stuff for the U.S., and that they could produce for their domestic market like we do in the U.S. The problem in the U.S. is we just don't make the stuff anymore. So where are we going to come up with, one, the manufacturing base to make everything we need, and two, where are we going to make it cheap enough to be able to, you know, continue the lifestyle that we like, which is, you know, you go on Amazon, you buy one thing, but you end up buying five things because it's so cheap. Everybody knows that. So these are the things that go on in the macro world, and how does this affect you and what you want to get here in the U.S., which is a cheap mortgage. Because the way money flows and the way money is borrowed, China is the biggest holder of U.S. dollars in the world. I don't know, last count was $3 trillion U.S. dollars they held. Now, what happens to that money if, in fact, the inflation process, which is what we're going through now, pricing increased, because they call it a lack of supply. Is it a lack of supply, or is it really a readjustment because the Chinese market and what has gone on there for 30 years is changing? I say it's because of that. And watching that is more important than making sure that what's happening here in the U.S., i.e. the shortages or the short-term inflation or long-term inflation. I have a whole section in my notes here about, is it long-term, is it short-term? We've seen inflation at 5.4% for the year, which we haven't seen that in a long, long time. And will that continue, and how will we curb that? The only way we've curbed that in the past is buying cheap stuff from abroad, so sending them the raw materials, buying the cheap stuff, having it either assembled here or branded here and sold in the U.S. That's really how it has been going on. I know there are economists that will disagree with me, but I think this is the reason for the inflation more than anything else. So what's happening in China? Evergrande and Fantasia, two large real estate developers, have defaulted on loans that they made to build housing and industrial projects. The housing sector in China is one-third of the economy. One-third of the economy. Think about that for a second. Is the housing in the U.S. one-third of the economy? I don't think so. So what happens if that sector defaults? Now, we haven't heard about it in the news lately. We did 2 or 3 weeks ago when Evergrande defaulted on this $200 billion interest payment. What happens? Okay, so we've seen China crack down on venture capitalists, or the banking system. One thing to note about independent companies there, the independent development companies, 59 of them, they're looking at 24 of them. That's what's happening. The Xi government is looking at 24 of them. And these companies, all 59, are selling, 24 of the 59 are selling company bonds at 20%. Now, anything over 20% or at 20% means that company's in trouble. So this means that the entire sector is in trouble if they're selling these kind of bonds. And what is the, I had it here for a second. 44%, where is that number? Here it is. Sales are down. Country Garden Holdings and China Bank, both are real estate firms. They are saying that the sale of their product is down 44%. So you're looking at default on developers, Developers selling bonds at 20% and sales down 44%. Now, why does all this matter to you? Because if that world implodes, the entire sector in China's economy, one-third of it implodes, what happens to your cheap stuff that's being made and sold to you? It disappears. Internal consumption will show that the Chinese economy will stop producing cheap stuff here in the U.S., and that cheap stuff really is not good for you. It's not good for our company, our country. We need to look at an infrastructure overhaul more towards the manufacturing of what we need both domestically and to export to companies. China's in trouble. There's a huge U.S. footprint in China, the investment vehicle in China, and what happens if Chinese, not only their mortgage sector, but their building sector and their real estate sector, what happens if it collapses? What happens to the world economy? Yes, it could be dragged down. It was in 2008 when we had a mortgage implosion here in the U.S. So that is something to look at. And if that happens, you're going to see rates skyrocket. If you have an opportunity to get out and get into something which is a cheap loan now, even if it's 2%, 3% more than you want to spend. Let's say you were looking for the 2.5% FHA mortgage and it's now at 3%. Well, that's still an excellent loan. These things are what's happening. By the way, they have a $5 trillion debt in the real estate sector in China. Bothers me. Anyway, let's talk about it for a second. U.S. prices are up. Real estate, 16% for 22. Refis are down, 30% in 22. Interest rates are up to 4% in 22. These are all prognostications. Wanted to talk to Rohit Chopra and Sandra Thompson, both regulators at the FHA and CFPB. We just won't get to it this week. Well, we may in the next section. I'm not sure. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Appreciate you listening to my China lecture. Hope you have some input, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.